post office and try and fool them into thinking we were somewhere else.
Yeah.
But actually, a week or perhaps 2 weeks before that raid, we were in almost the same location up in Ballyfermot, in a house opposite. And we were broadcasting away there, and all of a sudden these collection of cars and squad cars pulled up. All the people rushed into a house, pulled the house to bits. We heard afterwards they'd even pulled a panel off the bath. Pulled the house completely to bits, searching for our transmitter. They picked the wrong house. It was ridiculous. There were we looking out the window directly opposite them.
And they went to the wrong door.
They went to the wrong house.
Yeah.
But most times they went to the right house.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you must have had a lot of... how did you travel from one... You must have had a lot of supporters in those days to be able to...
Yes, the listeners were there because there simply wasn't anything in the way of music on radio.
Yes.
Even Radio 1, or RT Radio 1,
yes.
They play a lot more music now than they did in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And what they play now is, well, fairly small anyhow.
Mm-hmm. But I think that Radio Dublin was the reason why I think RT went into broadcasting afternoon and late at night, and eventually it was Radio Dublin who made the other stations come alive, and you were the forerunner in all of commercial radio.
We were. I suppose it was copying Radio Caroline,
mm-hmm.
because at that stage in the 60s, Caroline was off the coast of England, and they were certainly popular.
And a Dublin man started that as well?
Exactly, Ronan O'Reilly.
And, but I mean, physically now, Eamon, because I don't know an awful lot about technical things, as you know, Prince Terry was telling us that within inside of an hour of a raid, you were broadcasting from another location. But to physically transport yourself to another location, was it difficult? Would you put everything into a car or van, or what would you do?
Everything in those days you could probably carry on under your arm.
Mm-hmm.
These days, of course, it's a bit different. The transmitter is usually about 7 foot high, 6 or 7 feet wide, and weighs over a ton.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, it weighed less than one stone.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very portable and very low power. Terrible distortion and everything else on the signal, but there simply wasn't anything else, so people did tune in.
And what would be the radius of transmission, or people could listen? Would it be 5 or 10 miles, or...?
If you could hear us 10 miles away, it would have been an absolute miracle.
Miracle. So it would be even... Well, what would you reckon?
If you got us 5 miles away, we would think we were lucky in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Some people did connect pieces of wire to their radios and ran them out the back garden just to pick us up.
Mm-hmm.
People wouldn't do that today. If the signal isn't good and strong, they simply won't listen to you. But in those days, they went to great lengths to actually pick up the signal.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing all the same that everybody... I've been talking to people all week that this special program will be on, and everybody has said if they don't listen now, they've listened at one time, or they still are listening to Radio Dublin. It's amazing. There's no one in Dublin that hasn't at some time listened to Radio Dublin. Is that right?
Yes. Everyone knows about it. It's so well known. Well, it's been around for 20 years now, so it's sort of a long time.
And Radio Dublin has always been involved with, say, at Christmas time, the toy appeal, Easter time, the eggs for the children. How did that idea come about?
Oh,
or who started it?
I think it just started from people asking, could we lend a hand? They were down and out coming up to Christmas time. Could we lend a hand, get them something for this, that and the other?
Mm-hmm.
Or get clothes for the children, or toys for them, or whatever. Mm-hmm. It just escalated from there onwards.
Maybe we could ask Prince Terry, would you say that Radio Dublin has been so successful is because it has come from Dublin, it has come from the community, it has come from the people?
Well,
and this has been for the people.
Well, the majority of people in the very early days were mixed, you know, every kind of people, children, and everyone listened to it, even as the captain says there.
Mm-hmm.
Signal wasn't great, it was the power output was around 40 to 50 watts, and then eventually it was increased through the years.
Mm-hmm.
But there was plenty of people listened, you know, age groups, mm-hmm. you know, to tell you if you, you know, I listened, I heard you yesterday, you know, this is what they say. Yes. And you'd say, don't forget now and tell your friends to listen.
Yes.
And that's the way, like, you got to, mostly, like, working people, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Everyone actually listened.
Listened in.
Yeah, even including the post office, of course.
Yeah.
They were the biggest, I bet they were the biggest fan of Eamon Cook, were they?
Well, they did give us a great boost in a way. After every raid, of course, we were front page news in the papers.
Right.
It was great. We couldn't have bought the publicity.
Yes.
It certainly brought in listeners that way.
Yes. But I mean, yourself now, what, can you remember the first time that you went before a microphone, Eamon Cook?
Probably can't, no.
Okay. Were you?
I dread microphones.
You don't like microphones?
No,
especially
I
when
don't.
I walk up to you in the
court. Exactly.
Don't shy away. Keep out of my way. But the Sunday news report you used to do was very popular in many years ago as well on the Sunday. People would tune in to you to get the news of what was going on.
Yeah, it's just usually a rundown on what was happening in the radio scene.
Yeah.
And, well, little bits of information in the background.
Hmm.
But radio has changed since then. People want a lot more music, little bits of information, news and things like that. But radio has just simply changed.
Uh-huh.
It's time to change with it.
Would you say that you're shy of the microphone, Eamon, or what is it? Or do you find it? You find that you communicate better if you can see the person? Do you think it's difficult?
Probably could, yes. But I simply haven't a voice for radio.
Uh-huh.
It's as simple as that.
Well, I used to. I must admit now, I listened, I think it was in the mid-70s, I think, on your Sunday afternoons, I must admit now. And you were able to communicate, and I think that's what radio is all about, isn't it, really?
Yes, I could communicate all right.
And you're still doing it?
Just about.
Maybe Prince Terry, can you remember the first time that you went on radio or put your voice to the microphone and... Did you think that anybody was listening out there? What kind of audience did you think you had in the beginning? Or
that was actually the problem in the very early days. You wondered if there was anybody out there at all.
Yes.
And you were waiting patiently for letters from listeners. Yeah, kind of, you know, you're talking to... I mean, it's the old saying, and maybe I was talking to myself.
Yes.
You know, talking to the microphone, nobody heard me, you know, that type of thing, you know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But it's a lot easier to talk to a microphone than having a television camera on you.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Radio is more entertaining. I think a lot of people have turned back in the last few years to radio and turning off television, aren't they?
It seems to be picking up radio quite a lot now with DXers and all that. There seems to be quite a lot of... It's a very, very good hobby. I'd recommend it to anybody to start doing a bit of DXing because it's a wonderful hobby, and once it gets in your blood...
Now, for the listeners who don't know what DXing, you have to... Because a lot of people out there who don't know a lot about radio, maybe you could explain to them what that means.
Well, DXing means, simply listening to radio, and if you want a shortwave bands, which a lot of people don't know what SW means for under radio.
Shortwave.
Shortwave bands.
And Radio Dublin broadcasts on shortwave as well?
Well, except our transmitters broke down at the moment.
Uh-huh. It's actually broke down at the moment.
Yeah.
Long distance reception reports, which is very helpful to the station, sending in the quality or modulation, which and signal strength and...
Yes.
Things like that to the station, you know, a general report and what it's like as they're receiving it.
Uh-huh.
They'll be quite interested in that. And they also verify that with a QSL card, which is a station name with just simply like a postcard, the size of a postcard with a station's name on it.
Uh-huh.
And there are people who actually save them, thousands of them.
Yes.
Right off to different stations all over the world.
Eamon Cook, you've had cards from all over the world. What's the furthest point you've received these cards from? Norway, Sweden?
Oh, no, sure. We've got them from everywhere. New Zealand, Australia, the States, Argentina, Brazil, everywhere practically you could think of.
Uh-huh.
Except for some strange reason, the Middle East. Our signal on shortwave simply doesn't go there.
Go there, but goes to Scandinavian countries.
Yes. Well, these Scandinavian countries will pick up the medium wave signal.
Yes.
Almost as good as shortwave.
Mm-hmm. But the you were saying there, Eamon, before that radio has changed a lot in the last 10, even in the last 5-6 years, would you say? Or
it has. It's gone perhaps a little bit too commercial. Some have dropped out of the community orientated radio and gone simply for making money. It's a pity.
Because if because people like to feel associated in some way, they don't like to be just a number, I suppose.
Yeah, you simply do need that personal approach on radio still.
Well, Radio Dublin has retained that closeness, hasn't it, with the
community? Yes, we seem to have still kept that somehow. Mm-hmm.
Was it always was it always in your vision to hold it in that kind of community effort or?
Yes, because in the long run, that's what the licences are going to be handed out for. Mm-hmm. Local community radio, not radio stations covering half of the countryside.
Mm-hmm. Now, talking about community things, I was talking to you on the telephone yesterday, and we better mention that I think it's about less than half a dozen doors from us there's something happening, isn't there, Eamon?
There is,
maybe you could tell the listeners.
Well, if you read the Evening Herald tonight, I'm sure you'll see it in it as well. I haven't read the article there, but what's happening up here in Inchicoras, some of our lovely houses are vanishing altogether. We lost two over the past couple of years. One of them was Dr. John O'Connell, the TD. His house is gone. A beautiful, big, three-storied white house that stood out for miles. Gone, demolished, and there's a block of flats in its place. Mm-hmm. Another house almost opposite it there, Silverdale, it's gone, of course, and more houses there. Mm-hmm. And the latest to suffer, of course, is St. Jude's Church.
That's right.
I don't know how old it is. It's hundreds of years old.
Mm-hmm. and the Kilmainham Heritage people.
Yes, there are people here in Shikor concerned about the church. They'd like to preserve it. Not so much as a church, because the congregation has simply dropped off.
Yes.
But they would like to preserve the building intact.
Yes.
It's been done around the city here. Offices have opened up in churches. Like I think there's one up in Ratgar, Ratmine, somewhere in that direction, with the Hibernian Insurance.
That's right, just above Ranelagh, actually.
And
they've retained, they've retained the old...
the outside is still the same. It has turned into offices inside, but the building is still actually intact. And I think that's what some of the residents want.
Yes.
They want the building kept intact. But unfortunately, the roof is missing at the moment, so a couple of weeks of rain and there won't be anything to preserve.
Yes. And certain people are stripping it and sending it to Kildare or something, isn't it?
Apparently some member of... The word is, anyhow, that some member of the Guinness family have bought the building and intend removing part of it, the brickwork, anyhow, down the country.
Yes. And, of course, the local people want to hold on to it.
They do, yeah. They want the building to stay there and intact.
And talking about...
And anything you can think of in that line, where people want to raise funds for a charity, certainly we get involved there.
Well, we'll take a music break, and we better play some... Is there anybody in particular, yourself, Eamon Cook, or Prince Terry, that you want us to play some music for?
Personally, no. You were asking me to look up the station record there, but while you're playing that bit of music, I'll have a search, see can I find it.
Right,
Choice of music,
right.
Perry Como.
Okay, well, Eamon Cook is going to get Perry Como, and hopefully...
I won't find Perry Como, I'll find our station record.
Okay. Okay, well, we'll take
Pirate's Lullaby.
Pirate's Lullaby, Pirate's Lullaby, that's what I want to actually
have
a look at.
I have it here, yes. I have it here.
We have it.
I have it here, indeed, I have it here, indeed.
Yeah, you have a copy.
Yes, the one you gave me a present of, Eamon.
Great. There are actually a few of them around. The Pirate's Lullaby, by the way, was the station's own record that was made for us back in... Oh, I don't know when.
Well, there we go.
Here it is. How's the tea situation?
Thank you.
There we are. Back on the air again. Eamon Cook, we are taking a live telephone call. It's Tony Lynch, I think we have on the line. So if you have your earphones there, Eamon, you should be able to. Hello, Tony.
Good morning. Yes.
Good morning. You want to ask Eamon Cook a question now?
Well, I'd like to say to Eamon, first of all, that being a pioneer, so to speak, of the type of radio station we hear today, Radio Dublin, as I say, was one of the pioneers. And they went through a lot in the early days, raids from the TNT and the Gardaí. And what I find what I'm concerned about is that there's not enough emphasis from the government or not enough interest in young people today. Now, the pressures are not really on your stations now as they were in the old days. And I'd just like to ask Eamon, where does he think radio's going to go from here?
Well, it's very, very hard to know. It won't get into a license situation anyhow for another perhaps 2 years at the earliest. Where will it go from there? Well, there's all sorts of groups fighting for licenses, trouble. Some are fighting for it just to make money. They want to become another Radio Nova and beam signals all over the place, or a Radio Luxembourg or whatever. And they're hoping that they will get a license for that. They're the people with plenty of money to pour into stations all over the place.
Well, I'll tell you, Eamon, listening to your programme this evening, it's very relaxing. Mm. And people on Radio Dublin, I find, are the type of disc jockeys that they're themselves, they don't seem to be influenced by the American approach, you know.
No, they don't have, they don't have this American accent.
And so on. Mm. And as you say, there's a lot of radio stations, you've mentioned a few. Yeah. They do supply a good service, but
they do, yeah.
They're not as natural as they should be for Irish listeners.
Well, if you take it this way, the majority of people in this country are ordinary working class.
Yeah.
And people would prefer to set up stations for the middle class and the upper classes.
Yeah.
Whereas the poor majority are left out. The ordinary Joe Soap in the street, it's a case of, ah, what about him? Whereas he's in the majority, he should be catered for.
Yes, exactly. Well, as I say again, I think you're doing a terrific job.
Have you, Tony, have you been listening to Radio Dublin for a long time?
I have, yeah. Well, more or less since the beginning. You know, I put on the earphones when I'm in bed, and when I'm in work sometimes I listen in. But I think it proves one thing from the Band-Aid concerts and things like that, that radio stations now, RTE have a second station now that caters for the younger listener. Mm. Now, I'm in my 30s now, but I remember when I was a teenager, most of the programs on RTE were sponsored. And if you wanted to listen to late-night radio, it was Caroline or Luxembourg. Mm. And I think now that if your listeners, if you as a station come under threat again from governments wanting to close down or whatever, I think you've got a vast amount of people behind, because what you're actually doing is not only supplying a good service, but teenagers today having an awful lot to do. There's an awful lot of temptation in the way, and innocent fun like listening to their favourite records and asking for a quest to be played, I think it's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
And that's all I like to say, really.
Okay, Tony.
Thanks very much.
Okay, good morning.
Bye-bye.
But is that typical of the comments that you get from people, Eamon Cook, across the board, from telephone calls and...
Yes, the normal run of listeners, that's the normal.
What other kind of things do they ask when you go around, and... Are they always asking for requests all the time? Will you play
requests?
Is that the main thing?
It's usually from young listeners who get requests.
Mm-hmm.
Non-stop. Some listeners would want requests played 10 times a day, 7 days a week. Well, those days are simply gone. You can't do it to that extent.
Yeah.
You can play them, certainly, your requests. It's nice to hear the odd request on radio. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could get back on to Prince Terry now. Some of the DJs that you've come across on Radio Dublin, and maybe you could tell us where they are now, or maybe some of the names now you can remember that maybe will jog the memory of some of the people out there listening this morning. Maybe you could tell
Mark
us.
Story has moved to across the water there in Capital Radio. I think it's Capital Radio he's in there.
Yeah, he was actually in RTE for a while.
Yeah, he was in
and
RTE.
Then to Capital.
And is it also Declan Meehan?
Declan Meehan again was into RTE. He's moved around a bit. He was in Sunshine Nova. I don't know where Declan is at the moment.
Well, he's, I don't know whether he's working with Mark or not.
Mm-hmm. He might be.
Mark was with Radio Dublin in the very early days.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Declan was also with another station at one stage as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Started up.
ARD, our first competitor, that came on the air
ARD,
back in the
old
days.
Yeah, the ARD, it was, of course, to a lot of people who would know what ARD, Alternative Radio Dublin, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
and
right, yeah.
And they did you... Well, Eamon Cook, maybe you could come in again. When you saw all these other radio stations mushrooming all around the place, because Radio Dublin was the first, were you annoyed? Were you...
Oh, no. It was obvious it was going to happen. Mm. After one of the court cases we went through, Prince Siri there was telling about that raid in Ballyfermot.
Yes.
Where they found the bits of pieces buried in the back garden. That case actually went to court.
Yes.
And it was thrown out of court. The post office authorities couldn't prove that the transmitter, which they had, could transmit. We were insisting it could do other work, and there was actually a loophole in the law, and once that loophole had been opened up, it was open to anyone to open up a radio station. Raids did continue for a while after that, but it was simply a waste of time.
I think there was one before that, Captain Cook. I like calling you Captain Cook.
Yeah. There was one. Do you remember way back in the very, very early days when Ken Sheehan and a few others were in a flat there in, where was it, Sean McDermott Street?
Yeah, we...
I wasn't involved at that station.
Yeah, we actually closed down, I think, that day. And most of us went down. Actually, I didn't go down, but Uncle Ken went down to Radio Melinda, which was run by a community set up down there.
Yes,
and
that's right.
I went down actually minutes after the raid.
Mm-hmm.
And quite a lot of them there down there at that particular place. I think they cleaned the place completely out that particular day.
It just goes to show you the powers that the police and post office had in those days. They didn't actually have them, but they did assume them.
Yeah.
What happened there, the station was on the air, and the police, post office, everybody arrived along Black Maria's, the lot. Everybody was carted out of this house, basement, dumped into the back of Black Maria's, hauled down to Store Street Station, brought in there and waited. They had to wait until their mothers and fathers came along to bail them out. And eventually they were let out and brought to court at some stage later on, each of them fined £1. It's ridiculous looking back on it when you see that the police or the post office had no power in the world to arrest anyone.
Yes.
Their search warrant would have allowed them to search for transmitting equipment, but simply nothing else. They had no power at all to arrest anyone.
Mm-hmm. But it's,
and still they could in those days. And nobody knew of any kind of right or any way of opposing them or getting onto a solicitor or anything else. They simply went to court, pleaded guilty to it, and were fined £1.
Mm-hmm. Was there great comradeship between yourself and Prince Terry and Ken and the other people now involved in the radio scene at that time?
In those days, yes. Everybody fairly well pulled together on stations. You must remember, of course, that any stations then operated for only a few hours a week.
Hmm.
Nothing like this 24-hour day non-stop.
And was it mainly Sunday? I remember now listening to it.
It was mainly Sunday. Sunday afternoon. The station then branched out on Saturday afternoons for a while then. Dr. Don took it up on it, what, a Wednesday night was it, I think?
Something like that, yeah.
A Wednesday, I think he went on for a few hours, and a Wednesday and then a Friday night. then a couple of raids came on the night times, I think it was a Wednesday night, so he gave up the Wednesday night business.
Yeah, I remember.
It was unsafe. Yeah.
There was one raid actually one Sunday. I don't know where you were. Do you remember the court case where they produced the evidence of the transmitter in the court? And we were all kind of laughing about it because it wasn't presentable. The valve, I laughed at the 807 hanging out, the bits hanging out of it.
Uh-huh. Actually, that was the one in Ballyfermot and Lanton Road that day, where they got the linear.
That's right, yeah.
And they were insisting that was the transmitter in court. Lucky enough, it was Dr. Don, who was charged with it, and as the engineer going to court and insisting that it was a linear, but it was quite capable of being used for something else. Uh-huh. And that's what the Broadcasting Act, or what was it, Wireless and Telegraphy Act in those days, said that if the equipment was capable of being used for some other purpose than broadcasting, then you were allowed to have it.
Have it, yes. Mm. So you could possess it.
The case was thrown out.
But you have a great backing, or a great technical background in...
Yes, fairly good. A lot of it has been picked up along the way with burned fingers and pieces blown off here, there and yonder from getting electric shocks. So you learn after a while.
As you go along.
Yeah.
I think we're going to take a live telephone. I think we have...
On top of that, Pat, Prince Terry here has a couple of tapes there. Before we get too near to 3 o'clock, I'm sure it'll be of some interest to some of the listeners.
Right, we have a tape lined up. And then I know that Barry O'Hanlon wants to go on to say, I don't know what he's going to say, but he wants to say something to you or to maybe... But we play the tape first of all. Now, you know what the tape is, Prince Terry, so...
Yeah, the tape, it's an interview with Uncle Ken, better known as Uncle Ken on the airwaves.
Now, when was this done, Prince?
It was last year, in fact. It was an interview by... the interviewer was Mike Anderson. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very interesting indeed. He's probably listen at this time.
So Uncle Ken again, of course, is one of the founder members of Radio Dublin.
That's very true. Much so.
Yeah. Right. Okay, we'll hear it then. Done last year.
You weren't really attracted then to the idea of the radio?
Well, I can't remember exactly how, but the one of the earliest memories I have of being interested was an article in an evening newspaper about a pirate radio station.
In England?
In Dublin. Now, there had been the offshore radio stations, such as Caroline and so on the air. And the whole topic was something that was in the air. So someone started...
You?
Yes.
In Dublin. I thought you were the first.
No, David Kelly. There was a newspaper article about the station.
And what was that called?
Initially, it was Radio Atlantis. And then he later changed it to Radio Carina. And that was in 1965. He started in late 64.
I never knew that. And were you the first person then to begin free radio transmissions?
Using
the title? You didn't use the title Radio Dublin?
No.
Radio Ballyoglia.
Yes, I used... Radio Blacklea at one stage, different names such as Radio 217. I think Radio 217 was the initial.
And that was the medium wave frequency you're on?
That's right.
And what time are we talking about, like?
Well, the start
1965.
65, yes. 66, around that time.
And the transmitter you built yourself?
Yes.
From scratch, like, or? From plans or just dreamed it up yourself?
Oh well, I had a basic plan to go on from the Practical Wireless magazine.
And what sort of output or range, what sort of output did the transmitter have?
Well, at the beginning it was really only a few watts. I mean, literally 5 or 6 watts, I suppose.
So we're talking about a mile or something, are you?
Yeah, very limited.
Now, so you weren't really putting out programs. Was it music or
just tapes with music and some commentary on them, and also in those initial stages, we used it for communicating or attempting QSOs.
Was this BeWith Radio Atlantis or Radio Carina?
Yes, and there were a couple of other stations that came on air too around that time. Channel 66 was one of them.
Was this in Dalkey?
Blackrock.
Yeah. And over what period are we talking about did you keep this going yourself?
Well, over
Radio Ballyoclea.
Well, over a number of years, intermittently, like up to about 1972.
And you had no, like you weren't doing a weekly thing every Sunday, no?
I would be on most Sundays or Saturdays for perhaps an hour or
half. And did you get to meet the others, like the other radio stations?
Oh, well, I met, yes, you know, over the course, again, of a matter of years, I met initially David Kelly, and then subsequently the operator of Channel 66, which subsequently was renamed Radio Jacqueline.
Mm. Now, you handed over your transmitter.
Yes.
And the name of the station.
Yes.
Which I presume you were calling Radio Dublin at that stage, was it?
Probably. I can't actually. Mm. I certainly used the Irish version.
More frequently than Radio Dublin.
Yes.
And who did you hand it over to? Or who did you give it over to?
To Roger.
Prince Terry.
Otherwise Prince Terry.
Yeah. Why? Did you lose interest?
Well,
or was it getting too much of a hassle or what?
Well, at that time, I think that the possibility of detection was becoming a real possibility.
Mm.
But I also didn't feel the same enthusiasm as I had felt some years earlier. So I decided to let other more enthusiastic people know I've got.
And did you contact Prince Terry or did he contact you or is somebody you got to know?
Well, he initially wrote, I think, and then I wrote back and then he called around to me. And
what sort of letters were you getting?
Well, there were a number of stations at one period, that was 1970, called the United Stations, and we got an accommodation address.
Mm.
But apart from that, we didn't have any real mailing address.
So when you started in 1965, you would know you weren't able to give out a mailing address, or were you giving out a British address or anything?
No.
No, nothing?
No. Although at a later stage, we did have a mailing address, which came via County Carlow.
Oh, yeah. And did you ever use one in Brighton? No.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, first.
That was around, I think, 1970, mm-hmm. the United Stations.
That was in Hume Street, was it?
Well, that's right. We had, for a period, the Hume Street address, which we gave in the year.
Now, when you handed over Radio Dublin, you gave away the transmitter.
I did, yes. I ceded it, the operation, to Prince Terry.
And you still remained involved with Radio Dublin?
I did.
And in an advisory capacity, sort of.
That's true. At that time also, there was also a couple of others who had come on the radio scene. That was
Mark Story.
Mark Story.
Yeah.
And
because I can remember you. Would this be 1972?
That's right.
Yeah, because I think that's when we first got to know you, and I can remember you. I'd say you were present at all broadcasts, were you?
I was, yes.
Yeah.
At most.
This is in Prince Terry's flat in Crumlin.
That's correct.
And you were, I remember Prince Terry kneeling down and it was sort of you were broadcast on your knees.
That's right. We didn't pray on our knees, we broadcast on our knees.
Yeah. Well, you know this, well, it's not exactly a controversy that's been going on, but would you consider yourself the founder of Radio Dublin?
Well, not in its present form.
Yeah.
Because it evolved, of course.
Yes, I know. But you were the first person to run a radio station called Radio Dublin.
Yes, I suppose so.
And would you recognise any continuity then with the present Radio Dublin, or do you think it's no connection with the operation you started?
Well, apart from perhaps just the name,
and that would be the only link.
That would be the only link, because it's very different in almost every other aspect.
What, I mean, the present Radio Dublin is claiming to be what, how many years old?
Well, I suppose
19, would it be?
20 years next year.
Yeah. And the, well, I mean, they seem to recognise your operation as the original of the present station they're running.
Yes. Well, I suppose there is, it depends, you know, on the point of view. There is a continuity.
Yeah, but only in the sense of the same name.
Yes, and the fact that the people involved came to be linked to one another.
But I mean, when it had moved out of Roger's hands, you still maintained an involvement, didn't you?
Yes, it's an involvement through association.
Yeah,
really.
I mean, you had nothing to do with programs or
no.
Oh, you're just an advisory capacity, shall we say?
Yes.
Just on more general issues. I mean, you were talking there about 1965 and the small stations, a couple of watts. Are you surprised now at how things have developed and expanded from such small beginnings, like people in flats kneeling down on floors and things like that? I mean, it's a totally different situation now.
Oh, it is. I would never have thought it possible. But, you know, in sort of almost, I could say, my wildest imaginings. But it's the kind of, in a way, a reflection of general change in atmosphere and attitudes. Some people see it as a decline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And would you claim any credit for initiating any of this back, all those, what we're talking about now, nearly 20 years ago?
I suppose I had I would have to admit to having a part.
Because when I think about it, you're the only one really that's still
alive.
No, but I'm thinking now of Radio Jackie you mentioned, and I'm thinking of Radio Caroline Dublin.
Yes.
I mean, none of those people are involved. Well, certainly not on the production side. They may be building transmitters and things like that, or I think that's all but ceased as well.
Yes. Well, I think some of them were involved up to more recently.
Yeah.
Davis was one person who was involved up to some years ago.
You just touched on the reasons. Why do you think the number of radio stations has sort of gone out of all proportions? Every little town and village in Ireland now has its own free radio station.
It's very interesting, because most of them are very similar. It's more of the same. If you tune all along the band. I mean, at the time when we started it originally, the official radio, as it was, you know, had very little by way of pop music orientation. And there was a real need. But the interesting thing is that it has changed the official setup into providing a pop music station. And it's in competition with the larger pirate radio.
I mean, you call them pirate radio stations. They have nothing in common with what they're commercial radio stations.
That's right. The others were more properly called hobby stations.
Hobby pirates.
Yes.
Yeah. Just one final question. Do you think anything has been lost in the process? Like, we currently have very large commercial stations in Dublin and Cork and the larger cities. Is it too commercial now, the scene?
Well,
or is it inevitable that it will go like that?
Yes, it's an interesting question, because the thing about the large stations, the commercial stations, is that most people accept them almost as fixtures. and they don't really think of them in terms of pirates. And I suppose, you see, one of the original arguments against the whole business was the scarcity of wavelengths, which I didn't at the time believe to be a cogent reason, but...
it's been shown not to be true.
Well, there is a problem, I mean, with the proliferation of stations, there is a problem of interference.
Mm.
As they increase the power and spread out all over different wavelengths.
Mm.
In that sense, I think there may have been a problem.
But most people in Dublin would probably recognise you or claim you'd be the father of pirate radio. I mean, something which is... It's
well, I suppose, too, I did have a certain role in, not so much in the actual station, but in organising, because we did have, at one stage, a radio movement to coordinate, and it brought into contact people. For example, Radio Dublin, as it later became managed under Captain Cook, was on relatively low power, and managed to contact an engineer that had been a member of the radio movement, and whom otherwise mightn't have been people who otherwise mightn't have been brought into contact. It led to a kind of an interlocking of people that brought forth the new phase, which began in 1977 with this greatly increased transmitter power. That put the pirate stations on the map.
Mm. You must hark back to the days of the late 60s.
Yes, the early days. And of course it's changed totally. And there are still people, I suppose, doing hobby pirate transmissions. There are quite a number of stations.
Kenneth Sheehan, thank you.
There you are. We're back in the air. Just in case you've just joined us, you're tuned to the big station, of course, the station that people have been listening to all the time, the station of Dublin, Radio Dublin. And we have live in the studio this morning, Prince Terry and, of course, Eamon Cook. You're tuned to the Pat Jennings Show just after 1:30 in the morning. We hope to be talking to Barry O'Hanlon on the telephone in a few moments. But as you heard Eamon Cook saying about 5-10 minutes ago, he wanted a record, Perry Como. Now, Eamon, I think we have that record lined up. Is there anybody in particular you wanted played for?
let's think. I don't think so. My young fellow David. I think he should be in bed though by now. Mammy has probably put him off to bed. It's after 1:30 in the morning. And for everybody up there in Tulla.
And I suppose everybody who's been listening to Radio Dublin over the years?
Yes, there's some very... faithful listeners there over the years. Mrs. Spooner, I'm sure you know her well. There's so many others like her.
And I hope she's well out there?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, and it's called A Nice Song for the Good Times.
Yes, the Good Times.
For the Good Times.
Thanks for back.
After this record, we'll have a live telephone call from Barry O'Hanlon.
Don't look so sad, I know it's over, but life goes on, and this whole world will keep on turning. Let's just be glad we had some time to spend together. There's no need to watch the bridges that were burning.